You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings you the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm Dale Spangler.
And I'm Dave Selecki, and this week we have COO of Moto America, Chuck Axland. Moto America is the official sponsor of Pit Pass Moto. Moto America, home of the AMA Superbike and North America's premier motorcycle road racing series, is thrilled to announce that it will partner with Daytona International Speedway to host one of the world's most prestigious races, the Daytona 200, during the weekend of March 10th through 12th, 2022, in Daytona Beach, Florida. The Daytona 200 will not be included as part of the Moto America Supersport Championship, leaving the opportunity open for the best riders from around the world to compete for the minimum $175,000 in purse and contingency that will be offered.
In addition to the Daytona 200, the Moto America weekend at Daytona International Speedway will be the opening round of the 2022 Moto America King of the Baggers Championship, marking the first time baggers will race on the high banks of a super speedway with speeds expected to exceed 160 miles per hour, and also the first round of the Twins Cup Championship. Joining the Baggers and Twins Cup will be the ever-popular Roland Sands Super Hooligan National Championship. All three classes will run two races during the Daytona 200 weekend. Tickets are on sale now at DaytonaInternationalSpeedway.com or by calling 1-800-PIT-SHOP.
This week's race recap, we've got a return to Anaheim for Anaheim 2. And I tell you, with some great racing again, it's every weekend we've got a new winner. This is the fourth round in a row where we've got a new winner. Eli Tomac taking the win, his first win on that Star Racing Monster Energy Yamaha. So that was killer to see. He did have to work for it a little bit. I think Jason Anderson helped him a little bit by jumping off the track slightly, allowing Tomac to go by there about halfway through the race. But I tell you, great racing. What do you think, Dale?
The series just continues to, I wouldn't say surprise. There's just, you know, the depth of talent is so far this year that, I mean, Eli Tomac, though, wow, the real Eli Tomac, I felt like, showed up. When he's in this mindset, Dave, it just seems like he's unstoppable.
For sure, and he's keeping the red plate for another round, so that was cool to see. But I tell you, Ken Roczen was on fire early, pulls the whole shot. He and Jason Anderson got into it in the sand section. Their lines collided, and Ken had the worst part of it, went down and was eating sand. So Anderson went on to battle for the win with Tomac coming out on first. But the thing that really surprised me for the weekend was Cooper Webb. Where was he? Finished P8 on the night, and the message boards are alive with rumors that the bike is having problems. So we're kind of waiting to see how that's going to play out in the next few rounds.
I don't know if Webb should be getting too worried quite yet. Four rounds in, he is 12 points down, but you can look at it as that's a lot or it's only 12 points. So for Webb, I think he probably is not sweating it too much, and it'll be interesting to see if he picks it up at the next round.
In 250 action, here we go again. Lather, rinse, repeat. Christian Craig with another win. He's been solid all year. He did have to work for a little bit this weekend because Vince Freese with his patented hole shot and run up front early. But Christian Craig was able to work his way up from third to first about halfway through the moto, passing Moseman. So that was quite a battle, I thought.
Moseman had a missed opportunity for sure. He ended up moving his way into the lead. Didn't last too long, though. Craig ended up passing him. I thought Freese was going to finally put it on the podium in third. He's just riding super great. But then a crash near the end of the main event and a collision with Joe Shimoda. Unavoidable collision in the whoops, relegated him to a DNF. So bummer for Freese, but he was looking really good. I expect to see him on the podium. Good ride for him. This week's industry spotlight focuses on a recently announced partnership between the American Motorcyclist Association and Innit Esports to launch the world's fastest motorcycle gamer challenge. As the AMA's first foray into sanctioning an esports tournament, participants now have the opportunity to win an AMA national title in the esports discipline. According to Chief Operating Officer James Holter, the AMA's mission includes promoting the motorcycle lifestyle, and that extends to the digital universe, where they will partner with Innit Esports to develop the rules, structure, and fairness of play that elevates online motorcycle racing to a recognized AMA discipline. According to Innit Esports CEO Steffi Bau, the digital competition license was created to encourage accountability in the gaming world. To drive or race a motorcycle in real life, you need a license. By replicating this model in the digital world, the hope is to provide a safe and fair gaming environment that increases inclusion in motorsports and gaming. Additional information can be found at initsports.gg. That's initsports.gg.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This week's Moment in Moto History, we would like to talk about the return of road racing to Daytona International Raceway for this year's Daytona Bike Week, March 4th through 13th. No question that Daytona has the longest and most storied history related to motorcycle racing. The first race took place there on the beach in 1937, and it's run mostly uninterrupted up until 2019, until the race was canceled for 2020 due to COVID restrictions. The long list of winners includes not only U.S. race champions, but also international race champions from nearly every form of racing, not to mention Moto America's president, Wayne Rainey, three-time world 500cc road race champion who won the 1987 event for Honda. For 2022, we are seeing Moto America return to feature a nearly unlimited class structure to draw as many racers and motorcycle platforms as possible to the event. The motorcycle spec allowed to race this event has evolved over the years, where Formula One spec was started originally in the late 70s. That evolved into Superbike, which was essentially 750 to 1,000cc four-cylinder engines. And then in the mid-1980s, followed by Formula Extreme in 2005 through 2008. The current iteration Daytona Sport Bike will allow 600cc inline fours, such as the YZF R6s, Gixxer 600s, and Kawasaki ZX6Rs, but will also include larger platforms such as the Triumph 765 Triple, Ducati's Panigale V2 955, and MV Agusta's F3, which is an 800cc motor. No question, it'll be an exciting event, and varied engine platforms will add another level of excitement and interest for the fans to see just what the race teams can come up with as a solution to winning this historic event.
Couple of observations about the inclusion of Daytona this year is, I believe, Dave, it's going to be the first time in some years that the Daytona 200 is actually included as part of the Moto America series. And of course, now it's going to be the actual kickoff to the series officially. So I thought that's pretty interesting that they're coming back. And then also the inclusion of the King of the Baggers class, which I think is going to be super cool to see those big bikes on the high banks of Daytona.
And think about that. Harley's going around that racetrack at Daytona Bike Week, which is basically a Harley rider's haven. So to see those two things together is just going to fill the stands, and I'm excited for it. We'd like to welcome to Pit Pass Moto today, Chuck Axland. He is the COO of Moto America. Welcome to the show, Chuck.
Hey, thanks, guys. It's good to be here. It's been a while, but look forward to our talk.
Awesome, and so are we. I mean, you've got to be excited. You're, what, I think 6 weeks away from the kickoff of the season, and this year you've got some exciting news about that first race of the year. So tell us about what's coming up and what to expect for 2022, man.
Yeah, so generally our first race of the season would have been kicking off either at Circuit of the Americas, a support race for MotoGP, or Road Atlanta. But this year we partnered with Daytona International Speedway and basically are taking over the running and operation of the Daytona 200. And that kicks off March 10 to 12. And that's super exciting for us. There's new super sport type rules that are going to be introduced. It'll pit Ducati versus Triumph versus Yamaha versus Kawasaki and versus Suzuki. And there's some exciting stuff to watch there. And then we got the Mission King of the Baggers are taken to the high banks for the first time. That's going to be quite interesting in its own right. And then we have our twins and the Roland Sands Super Hooligan class coming out to join us. So I think it's going to be a different type of event. It's going to be fun, though. It's going to be great.
Yeah. How much does that mean for you guys to be back at Daytona International Speedway, especially just to kick off the entire series? I mean, that definitely has to be pretty special for you guys.
It's special in a lot of ways. I think probably especially to, you know, myself and Wayne, you know, our families. Wayne's won the Daytona 200, and you know, my uncle Skip Axelin participated in it and won the 250 race there back in 1979. And you know, my father was going there with Kenny Roberts and Skip for many years. So, you know, it's just part of the tradition of motorcycle racing. You know, it's one of the biggest events, you know, in the world, in the United States certainly. And you know, it's got a lot of prestige to it, and our hope is that we could continue to build on that and get more and more Europeans and more manufacturers involved, and hopefully that'll bring out more spectators and more interest.
And I gotta believe having that event during Bike Week with, you know, the prevalence of V-twin and Harley riders, seeing the King of the Baggers go around the high bank ovals, that's, to me, I was really impressed how Moto America has pulled that in and grown that series and turned it into something that a lot of people, I guess, just didn't expect to take off. I guess maybe there were some doubters in the crowd. I mean, what's your take on that, how it evolved into what it is today?
No, certainly there was doubters in the crowd. And to be honest, we had no idea, you know, how it was going to work out when we ran the first race 2 years ago. You know, it's certainly something that is very unique. You could watch sport bike racing, you know, and at different times, you know, in different countries, you know, all over the world. But you only see one King of the Baggers race. And you know, from the inception, from the first race and to where both Harley and Indian, you know, they're very serious about, you know, competing. And neither one of them wants to lose. I can guarantee you that. But it's definitely struck a chord, and overall, it's made us kind of rethink our events because, you know, we welcome the baggers and the you know, and just also the Super Hooligan crowd for that. But it's making our events more of a bigger motorcycling party. People that come out to watch the baggers, you know, get to watch the super bikes, and the super bike guys are exposed to the baggers, and it's helping our attendance, and it's helping our overall interest in Moto America and road racing, and there's a lot of positives. But certainly when we went into the first race, we had no idea what to expect, to be fair.
Yeah, and as I understand, some of the online impressions from those events were, I guess, a multifold above what viewership was for even the popular superbike class. So kudos to you guys and your team for coming up with an idea and partnering and creating something that draws in other fans that you wouldn't normally have.
No, for sure. And I think it just turned into one of those things that, you know, even the naysayers, the road racing purists are kind of against it, but I think they still watch it. It's like one of those things that you probably shouldn't be watching, but you do anyways, you know. And certainly the fans that do enjoy it have told their friends. And yeah, it's a very popular part of what we're doing for sure.
One other aspect for 2022, I'd noticed Moto America is encouraging participation in both stock 1000 and superbike. I believe you can run the same machine. Is that a way for the series to kind of just better help accommodate budgets and just make it more accessible and easier for racers to get more track time?
A little bit of both. You know, superbike is our premier class for the series. And you know, a lot of riders come up. We have a great platform starting with the Motul Mini Cup to Junior Cup to Twins Racing, Super Sport, Stock 1000, Superbike. So ultimately, we want our competitors to end up in that Superbike class. you know, with Stock 1000 and the level of machinery that's available now for Stock 1000, you can effectively race in superbike. So what we've done is just created some incentive for riders that do aspire to be superbike and participate in the superbike class. You know, if they want to race Stock 1000 and want to race superbike, it gives them more track time, more experience, more opportunity to make some money, because the manufacturers are very generous with contingency money in the Stock 1000 and superbike categories. You know, it's an initiative that's also supported by Dunlop. Our superbike cup carve out is basically open to Stock 1000 riders, and Dunlop give away, you know, a set of tires for the soup that those for those participating to the top five finishers in the superbike class that are part of the cup. So I think it's everybody pulling together and just giving some more opportunity for the young guys. Certainly they get some track time. They get a little bit more television coverage as well, being in both classes. And it's been very positive. It's been well received.
It's always exciting to see these guys progress through the classes to that pinnacle of superbike, and then even possibly go overseas to race World Superbike or MotoGP. So it's almost like a great feeder series. Shifting gears just a little bit, I kind of wanted to ask you about yourself. I know your name and your family, you've been around racing your entire life and you've seen some pretty interesting things over the years. But I wanted to ask you, anybody who's tried to road race a Yamaha 550 Vision has really got my respect, because I owned one of those motorcycles. And to imagine it on a racetrack would just blow my mind. Tell me how that worked out.
Well, I actually didn't get the chance to ride it. What happened was I went with Kenny Roberts over to Europe in 1983. It was his last year competing for the world championship. Kenny's been a lifelong friend of our families. My dad was his first sponsor. And at that time, I was racing motocross, and he needed somebody to help train with. And he was going through a divorce at the time. And at the end, he said, "Hey, why don't you come over and help out?" And so, you know, I went over to Europe and kind of saw what that scene was like. And I just thought, well, maybe when I come back, I should try road racing. Obviously, we were involved in road racing because Skip, my uncle, you know, he was pretty good in his day. And so when we came back, Kenny had a Vision, a 550 Yamaha Vision in his garage. And he thought that that would be a good platform to learn how to road race on. So for whatever reason, we built a chassis, we built, you know, bodywork, gas tank, seat, and all that. And obviously the Vision is a shaft drive. So when it got to the point where we were going to convert it from a shaft drive to a chain drive, somebody brought up the fact that the engine ran backwards. And so basically that project stopped there. You know, we got pictures of the bike, but it never ran, unfortunately. So I never had the pleasure to take it to a racetrack, but so there you go. We dropped that, and then we built a TZ250, basically made one of the first Delta box frames and took that to Daytona in 1984. And so that was, you know, kind of the second bike we built in the garage, but the TZ actually ran. So there you go.
So you mentioned the name Kenny Roberts, of course, you know, definitely an iconic name in motorcycle racing. I loved, by the way, your 70th birthday tribute to Kenny Roberts Sr. I mean, I can only imagine some of the stories behind many of those moments that you listed there. Care to divulge any of those? I was noticing one of them, like dislocating your shoulder at Imola, or the Belgian flying snails. I can't even imagine some of the stories that you have together.
I mean, the flying snails involve somebody else, so I don't think that they would be too happy if I talked about that. But, again, that was 83, and we were at Imola. I think it was for the Imola 200, actually, and Kenny was always a guy to joke around, and for somehow myself and Kenny and the champion spark plug guy, I think his last name was French, can't remember his first name now, but somehow we ended up in this big wrestling match, and I got stuck in the wrong position and moved, and it popped my left shoulder out of socket. And Imola was the hometown of Dr. Costa, who, you know, does the clinical mobile, and at that time it was starting. So we went to see Dr. Costa with my shoulder out. He couldn't put it back in there at the racetrack, so we went downtown to where his actual practice was. And, boy, he had about three or four guys pulling both ways on my body. And finally got it in, and then he put me in a body cast for like 3 days, you know, from the waist up. So basically my arm was, you know, put to my chest. And I mean, it was pretty extreme because now you just put it in a sling and, you know, and be careful with it. But yeah, I had to wear a friggin' body cast for 3 or 4 days. But yeah, that's one of the, you know, many stories there for sure. But Kenny's been, like I said, a good friend of the family's, and I work for him as my father did, but we've never really considered each other colleagues, I don't think. It's just been more family.
Always. And ouch, I want to say, because I've been through that dislocated shoulder myself, and I can only imagine the pain is immeasurable for sure. And talk about some of those race memories that that you had listed in that 70th birthday tribute. There was something about being the first MotoGP helmet boy, and it was something that you were able to make money from.
Well, not very much money. I think I told him I would go over there and help him for like $50 a week, as long as he paid for my food. And, you know, I was young, and I was actually staying at his house at the time because I was helping him. And, so I went over there, and, you know, nowadays pretty much every MotoGP rider has an assistant, you know, somebody to help them with their helmets and leathers and organizing their stuff. And at that time I was probably the only one. You know, he took me over there. I would take care of his helmet and leathers and boots. And, you know, but it was much different because I think he had two sets of leathers, and I think he only had one helmet and three face shields. So, you know, it wasn't changing shields. It was just keeping them clean, you know, over there to get a set of gloves at that time. I think he had one set of gloves. So, yeah, it was limited, so it was pretty easy. But I guess I was maybe one of the trendsetters. You know, like I said, every MotoGP guy's got an assistant. So I was doing that in 1983. I'm sure they get paid better now than I did at that time as well.
Yeah, before there was the term man friend, right? Because I think that's probably used these days now. You got to have your little entourage when you go to Europe and race over there, probably.
Yeah, there you go.
So one other question back to Moto America series is creating similarities between the U.S. and the World Racing Series. Is that something that, you know, Moto America is trying to do as part of like a long-term plan to kind of just help make that transition easier for younger American riders coming up with, you know, aspirations to go race in Europe?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I spent a lot of time in Europe, you know, running Kenny's MotoGP team. And when we came back over here and had the opportunity to, you know, take over the AMA Superbike Championship, you know, I knew through history the AMA had its own kind of separate rules for superbikes and the different classes than they had over in Europe. And I never really saw much sense in it because I know the R&D budgets that went into the U.S. racing and went into the, you know, factories, you know, Japanese factories and so forth. And really, I just thought everybody should be on the same, you know, same platform, so to speak. Should only be one R&D budget, you know, per manufacturer and so forth. So that was part of the reason, you know, and the thought was that maybe, you know, parts or equipment could trickle down from, you know, taking the superbike class into consideration, you know, maybe some of those parts and electronics and know-how would funnel down to our superbike championship. And at the same time, yeah, it helps riders adapt to, you know, those electronics and those engine configurations and setups and so forth. And, you know, I think it's been pretty successful. I mean, although, you know, Cam Bobier went from Superbike to Moto2 bike, I think, you know, SDK going from Super Sport to Moto2 is going to be a good thing to watch. Joe Roberts is over in the Moto2 class, but, you know, I think Garrett Gerloff, I know there's some differences in tires and setups and so forth, but hopefully the experience that he gained with us helped him in his transition to the World Superbike. You know, the other thing other than technical that we try to emulate is just the whole race start procedure. So again, if you know, our races run like MotoGP do, you know, for start procedure and timings and so forth, and World Superbike runs on the same, you know, the same pattern. And so for our riders, I think it just takes one more element of something that they have to, you know, or don't have to think about when they make that transition. You know, everything's similar. So hopefully that helps out. And that was part of our mission when we started Moto America, was to try and emulate what they do in the FIM World Championships.
And for sure, it's paying off, as we've seen many riders make the jump overseas and be successful. So, Chuck, we wanted to take these last few moments together and talk about Moto America, how they're reaching end users out in the field who want to see road racing besides live. Obviously, that's the best way to see road racing. But what does Moto America put together to get people to be able to see racing?
Well, we have it spread out in a lot of different places. You could start with the live transmissions for Superbike classes on Fox Sports. King of the Baggers is also on Fox Sports. Our Junior Cup will be on Fox Sports as well. Super Sport live coverage is on MAV television. We also have Moto America Live Plus, which is basically 3 days of live viewing from the event. We try and go do a lot behind the scenes, interview participants, team managers, fans sometimes, but really give a good look at what we have going on at the track, and that generally starts on the Friday of a race weekend, and you see every practices and qualifying plus all of the races live. It's a really good show. It is a subscription, and if you go to MotoAmerica.com, you can find out more information on that. And then generally about a week after the events, the races start going up live start going up on YouTube. And we do show some events time to time from Facebook. So what's that done is basically, spreads the coverage out. And, if you're not tuned into Fox Sports, hopefully you catch it on one of the other platforms. And if you miss everything completely, we launched Moto America TV, which if you go to MotoAmerica.tv, you can find out where you could tune in to 24-hour content of Moto America races. So a little something for everybody.
Awesome. So easy to find them and so easy to watch, and very exciting package and very exciting racing. We're really excited this year to partner with Moto America, and we can't thank you enough for spending time with us today, Chuck.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on, and hopefully we'll hear from you again as the season gets rolling.
Thanks again to our guests for being with us today, and thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. If you have a moment, please rate and review us. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're also following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit pitpassmoto.com, where you can check out our blog and our brand new store where you can get your Pit Pass swag.
This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow.
I'm Dave Selecki.
And I'm Dale Spangler. See you next week on Pit Pass Moto.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!